Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, as usual. And, Jim, we're now less than 3 months away from midterm election day, and there's a lot of key races we're watching around the country, and one that's recently gotten more interesting thanks to the late entry of Republican Congressman Cory Gardner is the Colorado Senate race. Mark Udall running for re-election there, and he's locked in a pretty tough battle. Here's Cory Gardner's newest ad explaining how he, like hundreds of thousands of other people in the state, lost their health plan thanks to a new law that Senator Udall voted for.
When Mark Udall voted for Obamacare, he promised us if we liked our health care plan, we could keep it. Well, you know how that worked out. I got a letter saying that my family's plan was canceled. 335,000 Coloradans had their plans canceled, too. Thousands of families saw their health care premiums rise. More cancellations are on the way. You might have one of those letters in your mailbox right now. I'm Cory Gardner. I approved this message. Let's shake up the Senate.
Jim, obviously there's many different ways you could do that. I'm sure there'll be some hard-hitting ads in different races as well. But that one, soft tone, pretty tough message, though.
I like it, and it says something. You're right. The tone, it could be a hard-hitting message, right? I mean, you know, particularly, you know, that letter might be in your mailbox right now. I wonder how many people watching the ad get up to look at the mailbox. Health insurance is one of these topics that people don't really feel like they really understand. It's kind of this almost like alchemy in this process of why is my health insurance company doing this? Why am I, you know, what rules do I have to operate under? How is Obamacare affecting it? It's all very complicated to most folks. And so they kind of tune it out until the day they get the letter in the mail, and all of a sudden, oh, wait, I don't get to keep my plan. Wait a minute, the president was pretty adamant about this. So I think, you know, the soft tone, the piano music in the background, it should work. Now, we should have no illusions. This is not a slam dunk of a race. Udall is no slouch when it comes to campaigning, and Colorado is definitely a purple state. But you got to like the way Gardner's approaching it. It seems like a good ad, and we'll have to see if we see any movement in the numbers in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Some of the independent analysts on this race think he's one of the stronger candidates out there in efforts to knock off an incumbent. And these aren't right-leaning folks. We're talking like Stu Rothenberg. People like that think that he's got kind of the right mix to take down someone who was thought to be unbeatable just a couple months ago. But as you mentioned, it'll be a tough race, so we'll see. As for the president, he's obviously not on the ballot, but his numbers are not very strong right now. And as most people know, he's off at Martha's Vineyard for his traditional August vacation. He did interrupt it for a few minutes yesterday to talk about how he supports the establishment of a new government in Iraq. But on ABC's Good Morning America, they're asking White House correspondent Jonathan Carl about whether the White House is worried about the optics of the president golfing and spending time at the beach while there are so many crises going on, both at home and especially abroad.
Some Republicans are criticizing the president for hitting the links while our military is striking these targets in Iraq. Are these optics troubling for the White House staffers you're talking to?
Well, they're entirely unconcerned about it because their boss is entirely unconcerned about it. And even if they were, there's nothing they could do about it. He likes to get out and play golf. It was pretty remarkable. He got here and on the golf course in almost record time. I think we were on the island about an hour by the time he was already hitting off the first tee.
And so, Jim, we mentioned the political upheaval in Iraq. There was also news yesterday about humanitarian, quote-unquote, efforts from Russia trying to get into Ukraine that the Ukrainians wouldn't let in. So obviously there's more tensions going on there. Just a lot on the plate. Not that he shouldn't get any R&R, but I don't think lack of R&R is his problem.
Yeah, I mean, just for perspective on what you mentioned there, Greg, my understanding is there are now photos of the Russians quickly rushing humanitarian anti-aircraft batteries to eastern Ukraine. So just in case, with all the wounded and all the chaos there, there's a need to shoot down more planes, they'll have that capacity. I believe the Red Cross on these drawn on these units comes from an interlocked hammer and sickle painted in red there. It's very intriguing because I remember, like, didn't Bush go to some event that had, right before Katrina, that had somebody playing a banjo or a guitar or something like that? He did something that was either a fundraiser or something, and people based upon that said, aha, George W. Bush doesn't care about hurricanes. He doesn't care about Katrina. He doesn't care about the city of New Orleans or the state of Louisiana. And people really hammered him for it. And At the time, I remember thinking, oh, come on, presidents do this sort of thing all the time. He's constantly in communication. But, you know, you throw that on top of the 7 minutes of My Pet Goat, and this precedent was established that if there's a crisis going on, the president is not allowed to do political things. And there's a certain, you know, argument to be made for that kind of philosophy, that presidents spend too much time fundraising, too much time on the that side of their job, and they should spend more time actually governing. Well, along comes President Obama, who just stays on his preset fundraising schedule, who, by the way, is doing way more fundraisers than George W. Bush did. Let's not have any illusions about this, all right? Obama, in, you know, a little over 5.5, coming up on 6 years in office, has now done more fundraisers than Bush did in 8 years, all right? So he's already, you know, well ahead of the curve. And what's fascinating is that he sticks to that schedule no matter what. He had a campaign rally scheduled the day after Benghazi, so he went out to Nevada and he did his campaign rally. The day the airliner got shot down over Ukraine, he stuck to the schedule and he was doing his diner meet and greet with people while the cable networks were talking about live coverage of this jet airliner being shot out of the sky. And now today, you know, like we're launching military operations in Iraq, a move that I, you know, pretty strongly support, although I guess they have the nagging doubt about whether it'll be enough. And he's off golfing and you know, he'll probably be, you know, taking the kids for ice cream and doing all these things. And notice, this is the first year he's taking a 2-week vacation, a luxury that most Americans cannot enjoy in these economic circumstances. So President Obama just doesn't care about this. And we can argue about whether it's overstated or overhyped. There's always somebody on the right who always says, you know, I'm glad he's golfing. Better he do, you know, golf and go off and make trouble. You know, Obama has decreed that this doesn't matter. And I think to most Americans, it actually kind of does matter. That at some level, when the you-know-what is hitting the fan, they want to see the president on the job. Presidents generally have long lifetimes. I think for the 4 to 8 years, you're going to be in the White House. It's not the time to really go off and cut loose and go off and enjoy yourself and all that stuff. So, I remember, when Bush used to go to the ranch and you know, I think it was, I don't know, it was Katrina or there was some, maybe the August of 2001, where like, no, the president really shouldn't be taking weeks and weeks of vacation. And if that puts me crosswise with George W. Bush, I don't really mind that problem because it's not like they're living in an unbelievably difficult environment in the White House and Camp David on the weekends as is, okay? So, that's my end rant.
On to the crazy martini now, and this is a different one. It's the story everybody's been talking about since last night. If you're of a certain age, and we are, you know that's the theme song to Mork and Mindy, the TV show that launched Robin Williams to stardom. He created the character on Happy Days, but Mork and Mindy was the show that really launched him to stardom. It's been talked about over and over in the last 12 hours here, Jim, about the great performances he put on in the movies, from Dead Poets Society to The Fisher King to the voice work on Aladdin, the Oscar he won for Good Will Hunting. Just a very unique personality in some ways. Apparently hiding some very difficult things because, if anyone hasn't heard, he took his own life yesterday at the age of 63, and we'll probably get some more answers on what exactly happened with a law enforcement press conference today. But people who loved his work are certainly saddened and stunned today and wondering what might have been done to prevent a suicide.
This really has kind of grabbed a lot of folks. And obviously the career is pretty much pretty tough to compare. I think you talk about the Mork days. I'm going to say probably his late 80s, early to mid 90s when he was doing HBO specials. There are a lot of great comedians out there, but nobody did an hour-long set the way Robin Williams did. And just this unbelievable manic energy on the stage, making people laugh. And just you could tell some of it was improvised and responding to the crowd, and he fed off the crowd. I think it shook a lot of people up to know that someone who seemed to be so full of energy and joy and seemed to be getting such joy out of bringing laughter to other people, that we should point out, you know, going over on USO tours in Afghanistan and things like that, could have such inner demons and such inner depression and sadness to the point where they'd feel compelled to take their own lives. To the extent there's an essay that's been kind of floating around on the web for a good portion of the day, and I think it's a pretty wise one, over on crack.com, a comedy site that talks about the number of comedians who suffer from clinical depression and who very often have deep-rooted, sad sides to themselves. And I'll just summarize, it's not safe for work necessarily, the language, so I'll clean it up a little bit. But he said, "Rest in peace, Robin. You've given us a chance to talk about this," meaning depression, "and saying that to prove that this has nothing to do with life circumstances. You know, Robin Williams was rich and accomplished and respected and beloved by friends and family. And in the end, it meant nothing." And they use a different term for nothing, but you get the idea. And so obviously, look, if you're dealing with depression, and I don't know if listening to the Three Martini Lunch is necessarily going to be the proper course of action, call the hotlines if you have to. Talk to friends. Talk to doctors. Take what you need, because no matter who you are in this life, there are people who care about you and appreciate you and don't want you to take that kind of step. Unless, of course, you're a member of ISIS. That's my attempt to be Robin Williams, to give a little bit of laughter to close off this rather depressing third martini of today.
Yeah, I think he'd appreciate that. Jim, on that somber but somewhat humorous note, we'll leave it for today and pick it up tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.